Osiris.
With music, it's like a lightning bolt and it's happening on stage. It's not like I'm conjuring some magical spell. It's just coming through me without any thought at all, except to know and trust that this isn't just something I do because it's fun. It's something that I've worked really hard for.
Hi, this is Maggie Rose. You're listening to Salute the Songbird on Osiris Media. Salute the Songbird is a platform for women in music to share their stories and let their voices be heard. And everyone has a seat at the table. Welcome to Salute the Songbird. I'm your host, Maggie Rose, and today I'm talking to my soul sister, Grace Potter. She's been described by Spin Magazine as one of the greatest living voices in rock today, and I concur. Grace has not only played every major music festival known to man, from Coachella to Lollapalooza to Bonnaroo to Rock in Rio, she's also created her own thriving music festival in Burlington, Vermont, called Grand Point North. And she hails from Vermont originally, and they have just been dealt a devastating blow with some of these floods they've experienced this past summer. So I know that Grace is personally trying to raise some funding to help those affected by the catastrophe. She's shared a stage with artists such as the Rolling Stones. Have you ever heard of them? Willie Nelson, Robert Plant, the Allman Brothers, Neil Young, Jackson Browne, and Mavis Staples, who I think her voice is very reminiscent of. She's also a three-time Grammy-nominated artist. Grace is my guest on this week's episode, and we cover so many things, but mostly the run-up to her brand new album just released on August 18th called Mother Road. It was the follow-up to her incredible and personal album, Daylight. But we also talk about the significance of vulnerability. She says vulnerability and insecurity are very closely related when she talks about the creative process. She talks about how her songs take on new meaning over time, the career in filmmaking she almost pursued, which actually led to her music and to a lot of the visuals that go with this amazing new music, and how her latest album, Mother Road, marks a turning point in her creative journey. Let's jump in to this wonderfully fun discussion with my girl, Grace Potter. Grace, so good to see you.
How are you, love?
I've been great. You know, it's been so fun. I already have been such a fan and admirer of yours for so long, but getting to like really dig in and prepare for this conversation, I feel so inspired just by you and what you do. And, you know, I have to confess that I often get the huge compliment from people comparing me to you. And I'm always like, well, thank you. That's wonderful. But there are a lot of similarities. Like, just we are rock and roll girls. We're kind of on the fringe of, you know, our love for rock and roll. But like, you span so many genres. And
by the way, the compliment is symbiotically accepted by both of us. If people are comparing you to me, that's a good sign because it means that I'm in good company with you as well. You are so talented and so awesome. It's fun to be speaking with someone who has a real grip on what inspires them and also a real grip on their place in the world, you know, from the beginning. Because I feel like in my case, it's been a journey of kind of dragging people along with all of my weird whimsies and wanderings, which it's just who I am. But you've always felt very much like an arrow with your intentions and with your music and with your voice and with your message. And I really admire that.
I blush. And I also think it's really interesting that that's your perception, because I've also felt whimsical and wandering and just exploring that sound. And, you know, I look at an artist such as yourself who's open for the Stones and Robert Plant, and who's had a very cool varietal list of artists at your own festival, but you've also collaborated with Kenny Chesney, who's more of the mainstream country, and you fit in all these places, like featuring Lucius on Daylight, and this very wide net that you cast, it still comes back to you, and it doesn't seem meandering. It seems right on the money with who you are. But I try and do those things as well, and I feel like I'm like, do I come off as unfocused, or do I seem like I'm just kind of pivoting all the time? But it's not contrived. It's just those are the compulsions that I've felt and tried to follow in an honest way.
Oh, man. I mean, isn't the pivot the best part? I feel like, you know, maybe not for a brand manager, you know, reading an article about Levi's. And if there's one company that has not pivoted pretty much at all, with the exception to removing the racist tags from the inside of the pockets, that was a crucial move. And like going from only having one pocket on the back of the jeans to two, there are these very tiny but very important changes that they make where every single thing feels subtle. It's what we call the Spock approach, where Spock doesn't do much at all with his face or his physical features in Star Trek, so that when he does do something, it's like, oh my God. And, you know, Adele's career is a lot like that. Adele has the Spock approach, but you and I are maybe a little more Jim Kirk.
Yeah, yes, we have that frenetic energy, which is great. But I mean, there is something that I think very intentional, especially about the music you've made in recent years, because you took a little bit of time off from music to recommit yourself to what you were doing. And you realized that you could be anything. You could be a painter. You could go be a mother. You could break a little bit from this identity that I think sometimes we might overcommit to as performers. Like, we feel beholden to it.
Oh, I feel totally beholden to it. Like, it is my ball and chain, but in a good way. It's like the sexual partner that you just cannot stop fucking. I'm not. Are we allowed to swear on your podcast?
You're allowed to do whatever the fuck you want.
And it's not poisonous. It's the fluidity of longing that never really lands in one place. And for me, I think music is what I love about rock and roll, no matter what genre it is, actually. Any version of live music is probably the closest form of media consumption to the source, beyond maybe painting. And even with painting, you have to set up the show. And the show is a whole, there's a contingency of things that need to happen in order for any creative inspiration to find its way out to the world. But with music, in my case, it's like a lightning bolt and it's happening on stage. It's not like I'm conjuring some magical spell. It's just coming through me and it's different every time. So it is the immediacy of the art and the body and the soul and the sound kind of coming through without any thought at all, except to know and trust that I did a lot of work to get here. And no, this isn't just something I do because it's fun. It's something that I've worked really hard for. But does that mean I owe it to everybody to keep doing it? I had to ask myself that question when I put out the record Daylight. Make it right again. I'm glad the answer was still yes, but it stopped being a should and it started being a I can and I'm going to.
Right. Well, and that record is one of my favorites. I think release always makes me ugly cry, and I've especially lately been turning to it. I'm not very good at letting things go. I think part of getting older is kind of realizing what you need and what you do not need. And then, you know, we don't always get that closure in certain situations or relationships too. So all those songs consecutively together sound like an artist who was doing it because they wanted to, because they were electing to. And also the vulnerability of those songs by comparison to your previous works, those were all very connecting and intimate, but there was more of like a collective we approach. And on Daylight, I felt like it was like, no, me, Grace, this is exactly what I'm going through. And that's really hard to do.
Yeah, I think insecurity is and vulnerability are right next to each other, and fear as well, and shame. And then comes grace. I mean, for lack of a better word, but really like that ugly cry that you're talking about. I wasn't aiming to make anybody else ugly cry. I was just ugly crying at the time. And that's exactly what I think hooks me into any artist, is when I can see their true colors, even if they can't see them themselves, you know, because I certainly didn't mean for that record to be my truth. It was just my next truth. But God, it really continues to come home to roost how much the vulnerability and the shadow self, letting her come to the surface and do some talking and some singing, felt like finally I wasn't fishing for the perfect thing anymore. It was just like a lake full of all the feelings that had been existing all along. And I think as you get older, it sounds like you're going through that too, where you understand as you get older that there's a resonant being inside you that kind of knows what to let go of, even if you can't or you kind of don't want to.
Was there, after this hiatus that you took just from music, you had a million other things going on in your life, but was there one song that you felt like, okay, this is the genesis of a new album?
The song Mother Road. It wasn't the first song I had written for a new record, but, you know, Daylight and going into that place of truth actually kind of created an urgency for me to escape from that truth a little bit. I think I had felt the pain and I had done that in front of everybody. And I hadn't had a chance to really nurse those wounds because tour got canceled. And to me, music is medicine and live performance is my bandage. It's like the way that I feel a song and write a song comes through my body and my soul and out my mouth. And then if it doesn't land anywhere, it's okay because it's still healing for me. But I think part of what I didn't do in that healing process, because I was pregnant recording most of it, Daylight, that is, was taking it out of me, you know, like whereas usually I would have that opportunity to take it out of my body onto a stage and just sort of spill it through me. And that's really what Mother Road was, a revelation that I didn't have the road. I didn't have my mom. Like I didn't have the mother that made me. I had to become a mother to myself and nurture my creativity in a completely new way without that reliant, like the road and the source energy from elsewhere, from, you know, the characters that are real that show up. So I had to fictionalize them in this echo chamber. But Mother Road was the anchor song that brought me to a place of like, oh, I can sing about not belonging anywhere. And I can make up these imaginary characters who aren't necessarily only me, but are all of the me's that I have been.
I love that that's the meaning, the road being your mother.
Yeah, but I'm also a mother on the road, you know? I mean, it can be like lots of things, but... Mama, don't let it be down.
And songs can take on new meaning, like from the day they're written. I have a lot of songs that I realize have meant more to me after I've lived in them for a little bit and given them away to the audience than they meant the day they were created.
Oh, of course. I mean, I reverse engineer my music all the time. And I think as I get older, I realize that that must be the case for all of my favorite songwriters as well, that there's got to be a recalibration every time somebody tells you a story of what the song means to them. One of my favorites is when Jackson Brown told the story of being in a movie theater and hearing a song of his that was so familiar, but he didn't know it was his own song because he was so deeply involved in the movie that it took all the way through the scene until the dialogue was over for him to realize that not only was it his song being performed by another artist, but that he had actually played the guitar in the session for the song.
No way. Was it These Days by Nico?
Exactly.
Well, I've been out walking. I don't do that much talking these days. These days.
That song, he completely was removed from it because of how committed he was to somebody else's art and how they had recaptured an essential feeling within him and reimagined it in such a way that it contorted itself so that he didn't even recognize it because it was someone else's emotion and it was someone else's mixtape. It was someone else's placement of that work. It's one of my favorite stories of rediscovering your own music through someone else's eyes.
Well, I know Jackson's a big fan of yours too, because he's told me so. He's always been super generous with his intellectual property, especially on that song, which I cut that with Devin Allman. We redid a version of it because I love Greg's version on Laid Back, and they were roommates, Jackson and Greg, when Jackson was writing that. And I mean, also just how precocious must that have been to see a 16-year-old singing those words, which I think talk about songs gleaning new meaning. I mean, that has to kind of blow his mind as someone who's got that in the rear view and like, wow, I mean, I was onto something at such a young age. It's pretty tremendous.
I also wonder about female to male perspectives on looking back, because I think female, the gender sort of playbook would tell us that men remain ageless and women age very quickly. You know, there's all these kind of stories of just like expecting us to become the old crone and be cast in a movie as the mother way sooner than the male counterpoints. And to me, I think Jackson is sort of an eternal hottie, which is a problem. Because I mean, he is the Paul Rudd of songwriters.
Fine wine.
But, you know, I do wonder if you connect with this feeling I have that sometimes there is, and I don't like gender divides. I don't like to think about it that way, but I do think society has forced us to ask this question over and over again. Like, what does it matter how we associate with our past and our future? And why is it different for men and women? And have you had any experiences where your gender has played a role in why you feel a certain way about a song of yours? Like, have you had a man come up to you and talk to you about a song that you've written and had it take on a new meaning for you?
Yes. So I actually would probably not say because of my own original opinions have I had this perspective. But I talked to Amy Ray about this on this podcast, and she talked about some internalized misogyny that she was dealing with. And I was like, what do you mean? You're Amy Ray, like you're the ultimate feminist. And she's like, well, it's not my fault. It's how we've been programmed. And you know, people ask me who are my favorite artists in an interview. And like, I immediately go to rattling off these iconic male artists almost for street cred, because I need to show that I'm a real musician by saying that I'm familiar with all of these rock and roll artists. But I leave out a lot of women that I really admire. So that's just a product of like considering yourself a musician.
That really resonates with me. I mean, the establishing factors within my first band was all about how much can I act like a dude, gaze at my shoes, wear flannel, no makeup, and just basically recreate Neil Young, but with the hot young female body to satiate a collection of people who miss that era. And I don't want to blow out Neil Young, actually. It wasn't just Neil. It was a lot of men that I wanted to be. I did, and I still do. But it also discounted the amount of women and Disney mermaids that inspired me. It's a very difficult thing to straddle that and discuss, but I don't think it's dangerous to.
No, not at all. I love that you're saying that. In fact, you are a rock and roll singer to me. Like, there is so much texture in your performances, but there's also a lot of those moments where you dare to be brash, you know? Like, I love that part of your vocal, but all those things you're saying about rock and roll are inherently masculine. So I think the challenge is you're not giving yourself enough credit. Like, you could do all those things and you happen to be a woman, but then that sort of tokenized you. And they're like, oh, well, we got one. There can only be one. And then that's where the industry, I think, really shortchanged you and other artists like myself who wanted to see more women in that role. But the challenges to women, I mean, that's the part that I want to talk more, because you're talking strictly musical and I'm talking about challenges within the political side of the industry. And I've never really heard anyone talk about the musical demand and the lack of challenges in that regard, or just like the lack of expectations.
It's always a surprise. Slater Kinney, always a surprise. Like, it's like, wow, some fucking punk rock just came out with some punk rock shit. No, that's not a surprise. And when I was coming up, Led Zeppelin, and I love Led Zeppelin, by the way, but like, there was this cover band of women playing Led Zeppelin songs. And like, that shouldn't be a rarity. It should be a thing that happens.
Want a whole lot of love. Want a whole lot of love. Want a whole lot of love.
I don't expect that when I walk out on stage, everyone's gonna be happy to see me. And I don't expect that when I walk off stage, everybody's gonna be cheering. I really don't. And I think that gratitude, that's non-gender. That doesn't matter where you land in the world or how you identify. It's about how you value yourself before you walk on stage and how you value yourself after you walk off stage. And so many artists torture themselves over this because they start to put a value on the validation of the crowd. And when they get booed, it is a devastation. And of course, imagine it's like dropping your tray in the cafeteria in middle school. It's the worst. I did it at Newport Folk Festival.
Really?
I fell, but it was because I was failing at the song. I was failing at the performance, and then I fell. So that devastation can feel bad, but I don't blame the audience and I don't blame my band. I just think that there's a cumulative issue that I take with it's us against them, whether it be with the crowd or females against males or developing things out in space versus taking care of planet Earth. And it is possible to do all those things as long as we have a non-judgmental approach to it. But then there's competition, and that's evolution, and that's important. I believe that, like, on an evolutionary level, I want to see more women being so fucking amazing that I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. All right. Now we're in, you know? And that to me is the one quandary, I think, in my 20 years on the road that has continued my journey and my questioning of what exactly I can bring to the world beyond just joy and hope and music is medicine, because I believe all of those things. And I believe that my purpose on earth is to share those things with the world. But I think there's more too. And I think that it is about whatever the Romans and the one-upmanship of the Greeks and the Romans and sort of like all that world, like that's one version of it. And it was very masculine. But there was an amazing thing called women who bring life onto the earth, for example. And there's just something kind of sexy about the fact that the competition is based on what we're going to do if one of those men wins. You know, all that stuff feels like it can be thrown into the mix. And what's exciting to me about the gender discussions that are happening now is that I've always felt very masculine. If you like got my blood work done, I probably have a little bit of extra testosterone or something in there. But it didn't change the fact that I have this fluidity and this feminine lust for life. It just made me want to get on the mat, get down into it, get into the dirt and the mud, and not just compete with other women, but definitely compete with other women, but just compete with everybody, roll around in the mud together, because it's just more fun.
Well, your competitors are your allies in a way. That's what makes you love the work. How disappointing is it when you do anything competitive and you feel like you didn't even break a sweat? I think that's how you keep the passion alive for it. And also it's just wanting to be in proximity to excellence and being a part of it.
You drive it. You know, when I saw you at Newport Folk Festival, that's a driving force. You go, oh my God, I got to show up today. Listen to Maggie killing it over there. I got to, okay, all right, better start warming up now. And it like fear boner inside me that's like, I got to get this out. You
fear
know?
Boner.
Fear boner. Very important. Very important.
I term. Love it. Hey, everybody. Hope you're enjoying my conversation with Grace. I really did. And I can definitely tell that listening back. I mean, we're like two Furbies talking to each other where we just get excited and we're bouncing all over the walls and all over the topics. But I think that it's actually very apropos because it's reflected in our music, specifically hers, when we talk about her influences. It's like Faces and Mavis Staples and the Stones and, you know, even a little Bruce Springsteen in there. I hear Jeff Lynne, I hear ELO. Like, I think she just dares to be all those things that she is. She just steps into all those aspects of her personalities. Personality, that was a Freudian slip. And without this context that I'm giving you, the next part of our conversation might be hard to understand. So we jump into talking about this album, Mother Road, which the content that she's created thus far for it is so beautiful. And it also draws on all of her film references. There's a lot of Tarantino in there. There's Thelma and Louise. She creates these characters, Lady Vagabond, Lola Vasquez, the little hitchhiker, that are all characters she invented for this record that are probably just spin-offs from her own identity. But I like that this conversation is a little more spontaneous and frenetic than most. We both were just so excited to, first of all, see each other and be talking about something that we love so much. And when you step away from this conversation and see this album that she's created as a whole and how cohesive it is and how all of these ideas were just probably scattered really far and wide and then somehow contained by her to create this project, it's a pretty magically encouraging thing. So I'm saying all this to say that the most beautiful result can come from the messiest beginnings. So try some shit out and be like Grace and don't ignore any aspects of who you are. You can find a way to incorporate it and present it and just use her as an example. Let's keep talking to Grace Potter.
Your songs are very much equal parts gratitude and fuck you.
And perfect. That's exactly what I want.
Thank you and fuck you. And that's one of the phrases that we had throughout recording Mother Road was like, this song is a little bit too thank you. We need a little more fuck you. You know, actually, that's not even true. I'm not talking about Mother Road in the studio. I'm talking about Mother Road that I'm writing. There's a story that was playing through my head and I'm working with a team of writers about sort of developing this story into something else. And in that process, they were looking through my notes and looking at sort of the attitude of the different characters, little hitchhiker, Lola Nomada Vasquez, Lady Vagabond.
Oh, yeah. I've been dying to ask about these two videos that you've released. But I want to preface, before we talk about these amazing videos, Thelma and Louise, Quentin Tarantino, dream masterpiece. There's even a GIMP in these videos. It's so good. I've watched them many times and you're just oozing Tina Turner and your rock and roll energy. In fact, that's like the first comment on the video for Good Time. Someone's just like, holy shit, Tina Turner. So film has always been, and scoring, being someone who says yes, as you say, which I think is very apparent, but also really hard to do, especially when, you know, you've maybe gotten cozy in the lane that you had found yourself in. You're having a lot of success. And then you worked with Danny Elfman and Tim Burton, and you worked on, was the movie Frankenweenie?
Yeah. And actually, I don't know if Danny had had the theme score put together yet for Frankenweenie. That was part of an experiment with Disney when they were putting together soundtracks to go along with movies. It was post Guardians of the Galaxy, but there was this realization that like mixtape approach to scoring, even if it's for the temp, for the writers, was really helpful. And a lot of the Disney writers listen to music while they're writing the screenplay. You know, they're even before they're shooting, they've got what they call temp music playing on set or playing in the writer's room to inspire the movie or to inspire a certain character. Like, okay, we've got this amazing sort of Zorro character. What would be the song that person would play on the saddest night of their life when they're crying into their beer at the bar? What would be their song? And that's part of character development. It's part of storytelling. And when I was in film school, that was a tool that got used a lot. But I don't really remember or understand how it went away. But with the rare exception of a few amazing filmmakers who continue to sort of pull that thread and pay the licensing for those epic songs, film and music went away from each other. I'm talking about Harold and Maude. And I'm talking about, you know, Simon and Garfunkel with The Graduate. I'm talking about Shaft, even. Who is the man that would risk his neck for his brother, man? Shaft! Can you dig it? These are things where the soundtrack and the movie were almost equally exciting events with one another. And what the marketing machine, I'm going like this, which Lola does. Lola, the character who the elder self in the Good Time video does a lot of this.
She's doing a sexual gesture for the audio medium.
I just love her so much. Oh my God. There's stories that go along with making films and writing films and creating films that to me feel exactly as cool as the craziest road story you've ever heard. But then there's like this visual proof of it too. And with film and with creating a production that goes beyond just a song and dives into what that song might look like, it's just something I have longed for my whole life. It's something that even when I had it in the tiny little sparing moments where I was making a music video, I felt more at home than ever. And I know my bandmates didn't always feel the same way. It was kind of a problem. I was like fully in my element, not just because I was the diva with the spotlight, but because I was behind the camera looking at with the monitor, watching the director and going like, oh my God, this was the other life I was going to have. If Matt hadn't asked me to play the open mic that night with him and the Nocturnals had just stayed like a little thing that we did on the side at 2 a.m, I was going to go be a filmmaker. And it all kind of came crashing back down into my memory as I was driving across the country. I did that for those of you who don't know, and I don't know if you know this story, but I drove across the country 4 times by myself and 1 final time with my family over the course of writing the album. But it was really a revisiting of all of these longings and roads not taken. I was exploring regret. And I would have been so broke, babe. I would have been so broke if I became a filmmaker. I understand now the things about what I do, that music is the only way I was gonna push the cream puff through the keyhole. And I will say, you asked me about what song did I write when I knew that this was becoming an album. Mother Wrote was the song when I knew it was a record, but Good Time was the first one I wrote.
Okay, cool.
The very first one. And so
there's your retroactive brain working and putting things together. Yeah.
My casting call in my brain, I was like, all right, I'll call to those imaginary friends from when you were 9, bitch. Remember them now or hold your peace, because you got to all show up for this party right now. And that's really what the album became. But at the sort of beginning of this whole thing, and I used to drive to Montreal being the opening line, there's something about going away from home that helps you love yourself because of what you can do when you're uncomfortable, what you're capable of or who you're capable of meeting. And that stimulation was clearly removed from all of us. So in the music videos, I'm trying to express that longing by basically being the ultimate filmmaking maximalist. You know, like, I hold absolutely no punches. Like, they're all thrown all at once.
I love it.
It's just a big splooey of my static dreamscape in as much as we could, you know. And this is a team of people, like the Ghost Dance team is, I've worked with Catherine and Jesse and Drew Levin, the DP, on the release video, and then Mother Road, and then Good Time. And we are now continuing on down that road with our, is this thank you or fuck you? You know, that world that we're in and that they have kindly wandered into with me is a world that I've been living in my whole life. And I'm finally kind of letting people know what the inside of my brain looks like.
It's very exciting. There's a stick up in a diner from what I think are a couple Mennonites with barbed wire wrapped around baseball bats, a gimp, Lady Vagabond, and then Senora Velasquez.
Yes. Lola Nomada Vasquez, who is a 93-year-old version of a runaway from the Dust Bowl, who then became a famous Pulp Fiction novelist and had a TV show that in the 50s, 60s, and 70s was a big hit. And then there are multitudes of other TV shows that Lola wrote, but the one that was the big hit was Lady Vagabond. And she lived alongside Batman and, you know, the Green Hornet and all the superheroes and comic books of the time. So we need to place ourselves in a dimension where there is a third truth and a third universe that is narrated by a woman.
So the company that you worked with, what are they called, the directors?
Ghost Dance Film. And it's, my director is Catherine Fordham. And our creative writer and collaborator, Jesse Leonard, she and Catherine, I mean, this all started because of the treatment they wrote for Release, in which the song Release for them, they saw as me, I'm going to cry. Even just thinking about it, it makes me like lose it, because I didn't know that it was that until they showed me the treatment where I forgive myself. And I just couldn't actually understand that that's what the song was probably always about, until they handed it to me. Because I think so many people, when you hear music, you can see musicians that are willing to be vulnerable so much better than they can see themselves. Even when we're vulnerable, we don't know we're being vulnerable. Like, it was a magic trick. But with them, there's no sleight of hand. They are the most soul-digging creatures you've ever met. They're completely magical. And everything about what they were feeling and exploring with me was probably true in their lives as well. And I think that for the connection I had, and over the course of my whole career with other females, it's always felt like the females I connected to the most were ones that weren't just trying to get somewhere, but were already wondering how they got there.
That's so cool and so wonderful that you already have such a great relationship with them, and you can probably just mine so much more from your collaborations. I can't wait to see what else you put together. And I mean, we talked a lot about gender and everything, but what is your favorite part about being a woman even one who might have more testosterone than others, which I'm convinced I do too.
The thing I loved about being a woman in my early career was I felt special. I felt like if I was Greg Potter in the Nocturnals, I probably would be in a different place right now, and maybe not the place I'm in. So I have to acknowledge that there were things about being a woman that gave me a leg up, and that maybe I lied to myself and made exceptions to the standardized, just douchey, bad behaved men thing. But I think whatever version of me playing along with it or finding a balance there, it served me in the early days. But my favorite thing about being a female now in the world of music is meeting other females and meeting other humans who truly just want to tell the truth, feel the truth, and be the truth. Because I'm able, I think, better able now to understand that there is a difference between being a true music lover, being a true musician, being a true performer, and knowing how to go through the paces. And I think it's a superpower. And when females spool together into that superpower, it is definitely more powerful than some forces of nature.
Well, that's a wrap. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Grace Potter. Do yourself a favor, go listen to her new album right now. We spoke right before the album came out, and since its release, I think I've listened to it hundreds of times. But it's such a journey, it's such an adventure. Her talent is really unmatched. And to keep up with her on her socials, you should follow her at Gracie Potter. She's on the road right now, and she's all over the place, so make sure you go check out her tour schedule as well. Go listen to that album, damn it. It's so good. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. Come see me out on the road. I have some very exciting announcements coming very, very soon. And I know that they have a lot to do with this new music that I'll be giving to you also very soon. Salute the Songbird is hosted by Maggie Rose, produced by Austin Marshall, Maggie Rose, and Kirsten Cluthie, with editorial assistance from Kip Baggett. Edited and mixed by Justin Thomas. Artwork by Mark Dowd. Music by Maggie Rose, distributed in partnership with Osiris Media. So I will see you guys on the next episode of Salute the Songbird, and I'm leaving you with A Good Time from Mother Road by Grace Potter.
This week on The Many Lives and Deaths of Lady Vagabond, Lady V has recovered the stolen ruby, and now...
Lola Vasquez. I worked with her on that kid's show they made of her books in the 70s. She was obsessed with dolls. She told me she used to talk to them, and they'd talk back. And that's where she got all her characters. She got all riled up one day because I said she only did that because people treated her like a little doll with nothing to...
Cause you can't keep a good time down. Can't keep.